don't be so you.
You don't want to have an African-American museum in your office.
Are you comfortable with your boss seeing you in a swimsuit? My life is better than yours.
If you don't like golf, I don't think that you should play golf.
On today's episode of Corporate Homie.
Winning and...
losing. Now all he does is win. Winners definitely have a winning mindset.
And if you don't seize it, your career is done. The truths, not likes.
You don't get what everybody else got.
What up, homies?
Hey, homies.
Today's show is about
winning.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there. And they say, yeah. And they say that.
And
losing.
Right. Winners and losers.
Wins and losses.
Wins and losses.
Champions and cellar dwellers.
And cellar dwellers. And so that's, it is. So we.
That's what it is.
So we, right, because if you don't win and people don't like to hear this, then you.
You're a loser.
You lost. Like,
it's like not polite to say, but it's true.
But it's accurate, right? People don't want to be called losers, but losing is such a part of success. So we wanted to talk about today some wins, some losses, some distractions, some setbacks, all that kind of stuff. So as I just said, to me, failure tends to be, or should I say, people feel like failure is more public, or we perceive failure as more public. But to me, failure is as much a part of success as anything, any other ingredient in success.
It's so funny you say that, because I think any athlete or politician or successful person has had their fair share of failures, and they will tell you that they learn more from the losses than they do from the wins. Because when you win, you tend to forget the things that you didn't do well because you got the outcome that you wanted. And that's not the case with a loss. It kind of forces you to turn around and reflect and say, hey, what could we have done? What could we have tweaked? What could we have done a little bit better in order to have a better outcome?
Right. So the truth is, there's no great success that is achieved without some failure. I mean, one of the things I like to say to myself is Edison had 10,000 attempts before he actually created the light bulb. So
you're going to go with Edison. See, I was going to go with B.O. because, you know, he lost his first race and then now all he does is win.
That's the good Barack Obama.
That's Barack Obama.
For those of you who are not his homie and don't call him B.O., that would be President Barack Obama.
Yeah, but all jokes aside, I mean, he really did lose his first race, and he did not let that deter him and say, hey, I'm not a politician. He said, I'm not. Think about it, he'd probably be a 12-term congressman from Illinois had he not lost that race.
Right. So you can't, as John Wooden would say, you can't be afraid to lose. Failure isn't fatal, but failure to change might be. So the fear of failure oftentimes makes people or ends up being a hurdle for people to take an attempt or to stretch themselves for a new opportunity or to take a promotion or to move to a city that they don't know because they are afraid of the failure. Okay, so let's talk first about like when you get a winner's mind. One of my favorite winner's minds, and this is probably going to shock people, but somebody who I thought always kept a winner's mind was Marion Barry.
Oh gosh. I mean, the dude died an elected official in his early 70s, still high on cocaine. And then you ask him how he's doing, and he's like, I'm winning. That's right. What I'm doing.
That's one of my favorite things is when I was watching the documentary about that dude, and he's running for, like, I think it was like city council years after he was
all of the embarrassments.
All the embarrassment, all of the embarrassments. And he's running against, I think it was a woman, and they're at the like local radio station, and they call in and they're like, how you doing, Mr. Mayor? And he answers with one word,
winning. The genius of that interview is he's running for ward council. They address him as the mayor, and he says that he's winning. And he went on to win that race, I might add.
I believe held that office when he died.
That is correct. That is correct. You know, I think that, but I do think that, you know, winners definitely have a winning mindset, and they're always focused on what it's going to look like when they win. And they don't, it never occurs to them that they cannot win. And I think about one of my first early leadership opportunities. You know, I was the first Black female to hold that role. I didn't even know that at the time that I got it. So I didn't know that that's something that I should be afraid of and, you know, that type of thing. And then when I remember, you know, when I got the position, being pumped up my first day and finding out, like, everybody that, you know, my new team was on a performance improvement plan and we were leading the region in past dues. And I remember thinking, like, okay, well, we can't do any worse, you know, and immediately I wasn't down. I didn't think, like, oh my gosh, I've been dealt a horrible hand. I just remember thinking, like, you know, our goal is we got to take baby steps and take it, you know, one step at a time, you know, get each person to perform a little bit better this month than they did last month. Let's get these non-performing credits to perform. And I think that's one of the big differences in a winning mindset is you immediately go to what can you do to start winning? What can you do to start getting better?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I do think that sometimes, like you said, the sort of not having too much historical information or background on your task can make you unafraid and can keep you from having that failure. So one of the things I always think about winning, and I did take some notes for this one because I wanted to make sure I didn't forget, was that winners know that it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. So part of, I think, what makes you willing to step out, be fearless, take a shot, or as Wayne Gretzky says, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So you can never make the shot that you're afraid to take. And so keeping with that, if you understand that it's a long journey ahead of you, it's not just this one opportunity. And if you don't seize it, your career is done. If you don't get this promotion, you're done. Like, it can just end up being a stepping stone on the way to whatever you're actually trying to achieve.
Yeah. And, you know, I had a chance about 2 years ago to hear the first female fighter pilot in the U.S. Navy. She's a real life Top Gun. Her name is Carrie Lorenz. And she said something that stuck with me that I've never forgotten. And she talked about how fear hates focus. Fear wants you to focus on the fear of what happens if you don't get this task done. And she talks about literally being in training and you're trying to land a plane on this very small landing strip in the middle of the water. And you got this $100 million aircraft and everybody's watching you. And the 10 guys in front of you have pulled up because they can't land it. And you're just like, oh, my gosh, I don't want to die. I don't want to, you know, I don't want right. to die. Like, I don't want to die. Right. You know, that's like
the basics.
Right. I don't want. But did you die? I don't want to die. I don't want to crash the plane. I'm the only woman in here. And she says you have to block that out and be focused on just landing the plane and nothing else. And that quote stuck with me. Fear hates focus.
You know, that is so funny you would say that because, you know, I'm often asked that about, you know, you were talking about being the first Black woman on the senior leadership team. And certainly I was like that. I didn't know when I was up for partner that I knew there had been another Black woman partner who had lateraled into the organization, but I did not understand that I was the first one sort of going to make partner ascending from the ranks. And I do think that is something that I'm always telling people. If you focus on that aspect of it, you lose focus on the actual task at hand. And so then I think that is absolutely true. Another thing I think about sort of the winner's mind is, while it's important to listen to others, and we have a whole corporate homie episode about getting your personal board of directors or squad goals, you know, getting that together. And it's always important to seek counsel of other people. It's also important to listen to your own gut and to know that even sometimes when there are naysayers or people who don't think that you can do something, to just go back and focus internally. And sometimes I think you can have too many opinions, so much so that your mind and your spirit are clouded. And then you aren't really clear about what your own judgment is in a situation. So I think winners know how to block all the noise out, you know, when they're getting ready to take the shot. I always think about that. And whenever you're at a big game and there's so many people screaming and chanting, and some of them are chanting for you and some are chanting against you, and it's time to make the free throw. And the real champion, the real winner, knows how to isolate all that noise, go internally and make the shot.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, I think about when we start talking about the winner's mindset is, I think a lot of times, I know for myself, I always think about it sometimes as being too lofty. And I like to try to think about little small things I can do on a daily basis to get that winner's mindset muscle, you know, if you will, going. And it can be little things, right? I mean, that can look like, you know, for some people, that's one more rep or five more reps in the gym as they're lifting weights. That's another minute and a half on the treadmill that you didn't plan on doing. I think professionally, that looks like, you know what? I was planning on leaving at 5 o'clock today. I'm going to write one more email. I'm going to respond to, you know, make one more prospect call. That's one more thing. And I think those are ways on a small, granular basis, on a daily basis, you can start exercising that winner's mindset. And then what happens is you find that you're pleased with yourself. Okay, I didn't think I could do 10 reps. You killed it today. You know, you did 13. You did, instead of doing 10, you said you could only run this many minutes without stopping. You did an extra minute. And then you start to believe in yourself. And it's the same thing at work with, you know, things that you're doing professionally.
Yeah, that I try to do that too. If I'm going to have a big meeting or I have a big trial or something like that, something big and important at work, I guess it's sort of like in basketball, I try to hit a quick bucket up front, right? That's real close and easy for me to hit. So one of the things I like to do is when I'm having an important day is I always get a workout in that morning because it makes me feel like, I never thought of this, so you just said it, but it makes me feel like I had a success already today, right? I got up early, I got a workout in, I ate a healthy breakfast. And so I already have points on the board, right? The day is started, there's points on the board. Now I'm ready to attack this next big task. So I never thought of myself as sort of intentionally doing that with that, but I actually do that.
It's also why when we were kids and mom used to say, hey, if you're not feeling your best, put on your nice clothes. It makes you feel better. It makes you feel like you're already out here winning. You're already about to, you know, make good things happen.
Another thing I think is really important right now, especially in this kind of social media age, is you got to seek truth, not likes. Like we've gotten to be where people
say it again.
Yeah, that'll preach. Seek truth, not likes. And so I do feel like now people have gotten into this whole big, I want everybody to like me. I want everybody to click my picture. You know, I put up a picture and 73 people liked it or 200 people didn't.
I call it the non-dodgeball generation. The kids that didn't play dodgeball.
Because in dodgeball, you got to get picked.
You got to get hit. So somebody always says, what, Demetra, how are you motivated? I'm going to tell you how I'm motivated.
I want to be the first kid picked
in the gym. And I'm just, for those of you who don't remember PE class, for those of us, you know, who went to PE in the 80s.
In public school.
The teacher would pick two arbitrary students to be captain. It had nothing to do with their athletic ability. The kid that got picked first in the gym
is the winner.
Is the kid that everybody knows we cannot win this game without so-and-so. And the kid that got picked last, they didn't actually get picked. They were just left off.
That's right.
It's the non-dodgeball generation.
Right. You got to be the first kid picked. And you should approach your career like that. Like when they are putting together the squad for the next project, when they are putting together the next team for the pitch, when they are putting together the next team to go and do the presentation to the president, you want people to think that your work, your performance has been in such a way that we must have you on the team because everybody knows you're a winner. When you're on the team, things get done on time. When you're on the team, there are no typos in the document. When you're on the team, you're going to stay late. When you're on the team, you're going to make sure that all the links work correctly. And it may be that over time, people think you're a nitpicker or that you are too pedantic, but that's what winners do. They worry about the details.
So basically, in my Bun B voice, you're trying to get chose.
Another thing I think about being a winner's mind, and I think this will probably be interesting to say because we're twins, is you can't want to do what everybody else is doing. You can't want to look like everybody else. And so
dare to be different.
Dare to be different. And the truth is, if everybody else is doing it, that's what we call average. That's not going to be champion's work. That's what everybody's doing. So you're going to have to ask God for grace on that. Because if you pick something that, like, if everyone gets to work at 8, then you're not going to look like a standout hard worker by getting to work at 8, or if everyone leaves at 6. And so if you have the mentality of, I get to work at the same time as everybody else, I leave the same time as everybody else, I'm killing it. That's not
what you're going to get. You're going to get what everybody else got.
Right.
Average money, average opportunities, average.
So then let's talk about, you know, we talked about sort of having the winner's mindset. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, when you make a mistake and how do you recover? Because you're going to hear from, listen to the podcast, big Pat Summitt fans, you know, big Lady Vol fans, certainly big fans of Coach Summitt. And one of the things I used to love about her that she used to say, but you could also see it in execution and watching her coach her players, is that if a player makes a mistake, you always want to put them back in quickly. You don't want to berate them or point out the mistake and then they're sitting there noodling on the mistake. You want to get them right back in the game. And that's the same thing in your career. There are two types of people in corporate America. Those who have had some failure and made some mistakes.
And those that will.
And those that will. And if you haven't made a mistake, what you're telling me is that you haven't taken any chances and you're probably working the same job, doing the same thing over and over again, and you're very static.
Or you're delusional. They've told you, you haven't listened, which means you haven't adjusted. And you're getting ready to fall dangerously into that average category.
And so if you don't know what a quick recovery looks like, right? If you don't have if you're not working for a Pat Summitt and they're not quickly going to put you back in the game, that's when you go to somebody and you say, hey, look, I know I delivered that project and it got to the late or it was short, or I understood that they did not think the deliverable met all of the goals. What's the next move? I want to make sure that I understand, how can I recover from this? What do you think the next move is? Many times it is self-evident, but if it's not, then you need to go to talk to someone else on the team and get some feedback.
And if you don't know if you have been in that situation, then think about, no one is inviting you to be on the team. There are big projects happening at your organization and you're not asked to participate, and you were asked. So that could look small, as if you were in the conference delegation to recruit last year and you were not invited back to recruit this year. And everyone else that was in the delegation was invited back. You probably did something that you didn't realize that you did. You left something early and no one pointed it out to you. They just decided you weren't taking things seriously enough to be invited back. So some of it is requires a bit of humility and self-awareness to say, you know what, Jim hasn't put me on one of his cases, on his last three cases. I need to go have a conversation with him, which is difficult to find out, is this just not a good skill set for me, or have I done something to let Jim down? And I think one of the biggest challenges we have as homies in corporate America is we think we're setting the criteria. And we're not. So you can't say, well, no, I did this, this, and this, and that's what they asked, because there's a difference between delivering the task and delivering the spirit of that task. And the person who gives out the task, it's their determination that matters.
Right. I always think about the spirit of the task when you had that assistant who had the rental car. Do you remember that? Okay, so I don't want to call her name. So this is when I learned the whole spirit of the task story. So look, I'm going to tell your story. So Bemetra had an assistant, and the assistant was supposed to make a reservation for a rental car so that Bemetra could drive to some meeting. The assistant made the reservation to the rental car place. Bemetra was going to pick the car up on a Sunday afternoon. She gets to the rental car place to pick the rental car up, and the rental car place closed at like 5, and she got there at like 6:30. So now she doesn't have a rental car. And so she is, you know, obviously very frustrated, wants to talk to the assistant about it the next day or whatever. When she talks to the assistant's like, no, I did what you asked. You asked me to make a reservation for a rental car, and I made a reservation. So then I remember that's when you coined the phrase spirit of the task. Like, while you accomplished the task, which was a reservation, the spirit of the task is that I asked
for me to be able to get to a meeting.
In a rental car.
And a Kanye shrug is not appropriate at that time.
And so that's when I say that sometimes people don't even acknowledge that they've made a mistake. I think the first thing you have to do when you have had a mistake is just to say to the person that you report to, or shoot, even in, you know, any kind of mistake you've made with anybody, is just to say, look, I acknowledge this was on me. Those words go a long way. This was on me. Those four words, when you report to somebody, like, that tells them that you take responsibility, that you understand that it was a failure, and that you're not trying to transfer it or shrink from it.
Right. And I definitely think that that's a big difference between, like, we talked about the winner's mindset, and then even what we like to call, you know, winner's envy, or is it, you know, just good old fashioned hating, where you think the other people, good things are happening to them because they've gotten some type of, you know, special treatment, or because, you know, their brother-in-law, sister, so-and-so is cool with them. It can't be that they're working hard. It can't be that they're putting in extra work than I am. It can't be, it has to be that they're, that they've got some kind of break that you haven't gotten.
Yeah, I think envy and jealousy, and, you know, we all like to be like haters abound, but they really do. And I think almost all envy, jealousy, hateration,
toleration,
as Mary J would say, it all stems from a mentality of lack or scarcity. People feeling like, to me, when you are completely full, winners are completely full, they are confident, they know that they have something to offer, so they tend not to be such haters. Haters, to me, act like there's gonna be a finite amount of success available at work. And so there's only 6 opportunities. And so if you got one down for me.
Great point.
And so you should never feel like, if you feel yourself being jealous, and we all have had those moments as well, right? Where you think to yourself, well, why didn't I get that opportunity? You know, what happened? Why didn't I make this team? Or why didn't they promote me to lead the team? Or even something as simple as I wanted to run the United Way campaign and no one chose me. Before you get to, you know, it just didn't happen to me because I'm Black, or it just didn't happen to me because I'm a woman, start with some basics, which is sort of like, did the person who get it, did they deserve it? Right? Like, was it a merited decision? Take yourself out the equation first, because other people's success doesn't mean it's necessarily diminishing yours. And it could just be that the person was equally as deserving as you and they just picked them. And sometimes it's just that simple. Step back and say, well, I mean, they did say they wanted someone who had 10 years of experience and I have 8. Or they did say that they wanted somebody who had a master's degree and I'm working on my master's, but I haven't actually gotten it. Because sometimes those are guidelines and sometimes those are actually
rules
and requirements. So just to wrap up, you know, you want to understand that failure is a part of your success. If you haven't had some failure, then you're probably also not having success. So if you're sitting around saying to yourself, I don't make mistakes, I haven't made mistakes, then you're probably not pushing yourself enough to be in a position to have a W.
There are small things you can do each day to make sure that you are developing and exercising that winner's mindset muscle.
And then finally, we were talking about not being a hater, understanding before you immediately go to, you know, jealousy or envy, that you should take a self-assessment, take a look at who actually got the opportunity, make sure you're not viewing the other person's success as something that's making or diminishing your own success. And so I think with those things and the you know, more detailed tips we gave before, you could turn some L's into W's and have more W's than L's.
Get out the cellar.
Get out the cellar. As always, thanks so much for listening to our episode. We have appreciated all the wonderful feedback that we're getting and for suggestions on show topics. If you have anything that you have a question about or a topic you would like to hear, keep reaching out to us. You can email us at questions@corporatehomie.com, or you can tweet us, and we are on all of the social media channels as at Corporate Homie. Again, that's HOMIE. That's how we spell homie. Until next time.
Hustle hard, homie.
The All of You Get You a Twin. Get you another homie.